This is the podcast for March 4th, 2011. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the Haley Barber Recovered Memory Institute, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
I need to turn off my ceiling fan. Excuse me.
While Blue Gal's away, I'd like to note that I've secretly replaced my regular coffee with microwaved afternoon coffee.
I can't hear you. Hold on a minute.
I know. I was saying, while Blue Gal's away, let me just say I've secretly replaced my own regular coffee with nuked afternoon coffee.
We've secretly replaced Muammar Gaddafi's regular coffee with some...
with sheen crystals. Yes.
Sheen crystals. Nescafe. Didn't he talk about the drug to Nescafe? Al-Qaeda people were putting drugs in the protesters' Nescafe. He said that.
Nescafe. I missed that part.
Yeah, he did. That he did really, the Nescafe.
That elevates it to a different...
It does, to a whole new...
Nescafe.
People,
wow.
And people don't know who's the craziest this week between... You know, Glenn Beck's just been pushed right off the front pages of crazy. Hey, just boom.
I'm still crazy. Yeah, whatever. Yeah. Do you have an army, Glenn? Huh? Do you have an army?
And I loved. We want to thank our listener Paul, who came up with the idea of the Haley Barber Recovered Memory Institute.
Yes, that was a beautiful thing. Show us on the anatomically correct doll where the Union Army touched you, Haley.
Yeah,
Chancellorville. Re-remembering the past in a much more pleasant way is
Black and White's got along fine.
Yeah.
In Mississippi.
Yeah.
The ones that didn't were somehow found at the bottom of the lake, and outside troublemakers came in and found them.
We don't know how that happened.
We don't know how that happened. They were just outside agitators, just like in Wisconsin.
Uh-huh. It's like that.
Just exactly the same.
Well, we asked ourselves during the pregame, who is the rights archivist, and who is their historian? If you wanted to go find out the history of conservatism.
Of all the great conservatives, you know, yeah.
And the history of conservative thought and who was doing what when and where the trends came from and what changed over time. Who would you go to talk to about that? Because I've noticed that at least among conservative people I know, they're remarkably ignorant about their own movement.
Yeah.
They don't know.
Well, they have to be. I mean.
Yeah, they really do.
If they knew.
Yeah.
What they really stood for.
If they understood where they came from and how long this has been going on, who the real Ronald Reagan was.
Just and how many times they've been wrong. Yeah.
Their heads would, you know, it's a little...
Well, I still am very worried. I'm actually very worried about what's going to happen when Obama is reelected. And not to be too cocky about it or too sure of anything.
Yeah.
But I bumped into someone the other day who is a Fox News viewer. Acquaintance of mine, and they said, somebody I know said that Barack Obama's going to be reelected. I just can't believe that. She was just guffawing about it, you know, because her reality is that Barack Obama is, you know, the Kenyan usurper socialist who wants to destroy America. Of course he's not going to be reelected.
And everyone agrees with her about
that. Yeah, and everyone there.
The majority of good Americans.
Yeah, and the polls and the...
Well, she's, you know, the right more and more reminds me of our own private Sunni minority.
Yeah.
You know, the Iraqi minority that had been told for a generation by its crazy leader that they were really the majority.
And they were the best, you know, they deserved everything they had. Yeah. So.
And that when the shit came down, they found out they were not the majority. They were, in fact, a small, completely isolated and outnumbered and despised minority. They didn't believe it.
Yeah.
Because they knew they were the majority. Therefore, there must be something wrong with the polling. There must be something wrong with the news. There must be something wrong with the people who are lying
to us. Yes.
Because we know that can't be true.
Right.
And you follow the links of their logic back to where they got these ideas from, and you find this little festering cesspit of ideas from the late 50s and early 60s.
Well, and that's what I want to talk about is, first of all, this book... Thank God you're marrying an assertive woman.
Thank God for that.
Because I'm lying there and I'm ready to go to sleep and I'm about in a coma. And you pull out a paperback copy of Ayn Rand's Capitalism. And I looked at you and I went, you are not going to read that to me now.
Oh, yes, I am.
Oh, yes, I am.
It says here, right on page 200.
The hell you are.
It says right here on page 200, Blue Gal. That when she says no, she really means yes. And if I'm powerful enough to take what is mine, then it is mine by right. Yeah.
Let me read some more Ayn Rand to you at 10:30 at night during the longest day of your life.
Yeah. Because that's what you need.
That's what you need after the 7-year-old's birthday party, is let me sit down and read you some Ayn Rand from the early 60s.
Let me read you now.
But you found some gold in that book.
Let's be clear. Let's be clear.
Bedtime reading.
I did that with a smile on my face.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And,
you were not.
You knew I had a smile on my face.
Yes, you were not.
I was not being serious
about bedtime reading.
Let's be serious. It was like, what's the worst thing you can do to somebody just before they're exhausted and just trying to get to some goddamn
sleep? Really, that was a long day. The 7-year-old's birthday is basically a national event. And
so let me read to you now from some crappy thing Ayn Rand wrote.
Wrote in the early 60s. But,
Her unexpurgated
columns from.
Yeah. Well, it's her and Alan Green, young Alan Greenspan.
Yeah, yeah.
And a few of her other acolytes. And I have these things in my moldering paperback collection because I read a lot of them when I was very young and very foolish.
You thought you were being an intellectual at 13. By reading this stuff. Yeah.
Then I grew hair in places I never thought I would. Discovered girls. And suddenly it all looked really ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
But this libertarianism is really the province of very young men.
Yeah, mostly, exactly. Yeah.
Who understand the world, the way they understand it. A chessboard.
Yeah.
It's full of abstract pieces that you bang together. But when you pull this crap off the bookshelf and reread it after 30 years. It's startling how, and this is stuff that was published, when I was, before I was born and when I was a mere stripling lad, when I was a baby. This is from the, 61, 62, 63.
Mm-hmm. Before I was born.
But it's everything about the modern conservative movement is right there, including a contempt for conservatives. Her critique of conservatives from the 60s was their major failure is that they keep trying to compromise with liberals, and everyone knows liberals are just as bad as Nazis and communists.
Wow.
Therefore, we can't just half-assedly assert that maybe capitalism is a good idea and we should sort of tolerate it in a mixed economy. No, a mixed economy is just a slippery slope on the road to totalitarian domination and complete destruction of the American dream. We must celebrate capitalism, and only absolutely unrestricted, unfettered capitalism will do. And if you settle for anything less, you're a fucking traitor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That is the core message of libertarian Randitism. From the founder of the franchise. And it's all there. The sort of absolute condemnation of anyone who disagrees with you.
Yep.
And every third paragraph, it's Nazi Germany and Soviet Russia. Nazi Germany, Soviet Russia. Socialism, fascism, and liberalism. There's no distinction between the three of them. So in case you thought that was new.
Wow. So
Hitler
exactly
is,
what Glenn Beck's been doing all along is actually Randite. Oh, theocracy from
well,
the
it's
Cold
that
War.
Blended with Bircher crackpot.
Yeah.
And there's the defense of the John Birch Society in here. The celebration of Joe McCarthy in here is a good anti-communist, fighter, and a complete intolerance. But it's also this imputation. You read through here carefully, and you can see the seeds of Fox News in here.
Yeah.
You can see her finding some protester of the Vietnam War who was confused about something. And taking something she said and imputing that sentence to the entire left wing of the country and then saying, and that's what all liberals believe, and they're all evil because I saw this one girl say this one thing on television. Uh-huh. And the imputation of ideas just by quotes. She'll just throw a quote out, capitalism must be destroyed. It's the most evil thing in the world. Everyone knows that communism is the future, quote unquote, without any sort of citation. And she just will lay a sentence like that out there and say, and of course, every liberal believes that, which is why we must fight them at every turn. I'm like, but where did you get that from? Well, it's the Fox, some people say.
Yeah.
Some people say that liberals hate America. This is why we have to fight them. And the most interesting thing I found of all, or one of the most interesting things of all, is her citations of rebuttal to these fictional accusations of fictional liberals, you know, the hippie punching that was going on before there were really hippies, are all quotes from her own books. You know, as Hank Reardon would say, as John Galt would say, like, wait a minute, these are fictional characters you made
up. That you made up, so...
You're having a debate between imaginary liberals and fictional characters from your own crappy books. Wow. And that's what you call philosophy.
Wow.
And then, of course, magically, because you have a fight between a straw man and a fictional character you invented, guess which side always
wins?
And it's
how convenient for her.
And there's this real hatred and rigidity of thinking that just permeates everything. And you look through, and I look through here and I see just gold. Every page, there's some new thing. You know, the.
Do you think it would help if we started calling her abortionist Ayn Rand?
Oh, atheist abortionist.
Atheist abortionist Ayn Rand. I would think that would help. I mean.
Yeah, because what, you know, of course that's what you'd say because you're a liberal.
You're a liberal. Yeah. You're listening to the Professional Left Podcast, professionalleft.blogspot.com.
Yeah, I was on one of my little
mics. This is what, you know, 40% of our country is fed every day.
Yeah. Well, it's become their operating system.
Yeah.
They don't think about this anymore. They know it.
Yeah.
And so so she won.
Yeah, she won.
You know, Ayn Rand won, or at least she won a major victory. She has gotten a substantial majority of the active political voting population of this country. Running her operating system without thinking about it at all.
Well, and I'm therefore, just really wondering now what's happening to this operating system now that, you know, this Wisconsin thing has gone viral. And the people on the other side are really digging holes for themselves. This Glenn Grothman was on Lawrence again tonight. Lawrence gave him another opportunity to apologize for calling the protesters "quote unquote slobs," and he wouldn't. And they had some of the protesters on who, you know, were hysterical over everything, over what's happening, over the fact that they're being called slobs, over all of it. The four protesters they had on were just furious with him, and interrupted and didn't, you know, comport themselves as. You know, they were just really angry, and it's easy to see why. But I think he thought that he was sitting there looking composed and, you know, statesmanlike in comparison to them. And I just kept thinking, wow, somebody makes John McCain look young and in touch.
Telling those damn beatniks to go get a job and get a haircut.
Yeah, and get a shower, you know, at home. Go home to your mother and get a shower, for heaven's sakes. You're stinky.
Go to your average conservative small town chamber of commerce and you'll find four of these guys.
Yeah, oh, at least. Yeah, in the barbershop? Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Talking about who are all, you know, haven't been, you know, more than 20 miles away from their double wides their entire life. But are suddenly experts on foreign policy and economics and human relations and history and all kinds of shit.
Yeah.
Because Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh tells them.
Yeah.
The facts.
And Scott Walker. Yeah. Tells them that being a good Republican means you support the Republican governor no matter how crazy it is. Yeah.
Well, and that's where I would take issue with digging a hole. I mean, yeah, they'd be digging a hole. This is something that he just caught me at a bad moment. There was a Twitter from a very nice guy, one of our fans, or one of our friends, Arvin from Sex, Gender, Body, who was sending out a little message about, I think it was Bob Reich.
Robert Reich, yeah.
Robert Reich, nailing this thing. Here is what Democrats should say. And it was, you know, this is why we need to raise taxes on the rich, and it's, you know, it's income equalization and all the things I agree with. But I just – my question was, well, say to whom? You know, who is left in this country that is both undecided and still open to reason?
Yeah.
You know, all of these very wonderful arguments, all the holes that the right is supposedly digging aren't going to do them any harm because the people they're pandering to love this shit.
Yep.
And the people that they're alienating, we're never going to vote for them anyway. So, you know, I agree that he's making an ass of himself, but so what?
I don't know. They're working on recalling not just the governor, but several of the state GOP state senators, so including him, I'm sure. So,
that is practical action. That is action people are taking that can make a difference.
Yep, and can cause real pain. There's some pain for you. Here's some pain. You're going to be out of office. Boom. You know,
I know you do. I get questions from commenters and emailers going, okay, great, blah, blah, blah. I'm angry. Yeah. You're angry. What do I do?
Stay along with your nice little Photoshop, but you're not really doing anything. Right, right,
well,
right.
And, you know, what? More legitimately, you know, what action can I take?
Mm-hmm.
And my advice to them, this is for a commenter specifically named Steve, go local.
Yeah, we've said that 3 times in a row now. Yeah,
exactly. And that's exactly what they're doing in Wisconsin. They've analyzed the situation and seen what action they can take locally to get at the problem, which is there are too many nut jobs in the state house.
Yeah.
So what do we do? Let's get rid of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
In using the tools that democracy provides. But again, as angry as people are, you know, this soft fox-like hum will close back over them.
Well, I wonder. It's one of the things that's happening now is a kind of dog-on-dog fighting. I don't know if you heard about this tonight, but
and there are no winners with
it. It's a really big deal in Ohio.
Yes.
To get this anti-union piece of legislation passed, they pulled 2 Republicans off of their committee seats who were going to vote against the bill.
Mm-hmm.
And put pro-anti-union bill Republicans on these committees to shove this bill through.
Oh, yeah.
And actually replaced Republicans who were against it. So you can't – now it's getting to the point where it is Pol Pot within the Republican Party. If you're not on the side of this corporate ideology that's funding the party –
you're out.
You're out.
Yeah, your observation is perfectly correct. But what enables this to happen is a complete amputation of individuals' memory.
Yeah, yeah.
That they will not remember what they did yesterday because confronting their younger self, holding the sign that now contradicts 180 degrees what they believe today, is too terrifying and too soul-killing. And it is the sign of a completely dead and discredited ideology. And you know who says exactly this, if I might add?
Who?
Ayn Rand.
Yeah?
Yes. I will read
you.
You
are going to read this to me at 10:10 at night. Everybody, it's 10 o'clock at night on a Wednesday.
Everybody take a drink because this is fucking
Believe me, I'm going to right now. I got some
mulled wine.
Free range red with the mulled bag in it from Germany.
This is –
there we go.
This is The Wreckage of the Consensus from 1967. Bear that in mind. Anti-ideology.
So romantic.
Isn't it, though? A little wine, a little crazy fucking ideology, you know, all on Skype. So it lacks only violins and a loaf of bread, really.
And a webcam.
And a webcam, yeah. And a little bow-chicka-bow music, yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay. So, no, this is just I think people will find this. I certainly found it interesting when I'm reading this going, she really said this. And this is like projection on the most massive scale possible. Mind you, this is the headwater. This is the founding owner. This is the Sam Walton of libertarianism in America.
The Sam Walton of libertarianism. Yeah. Got that, people? All right.
This is Rand Paul is named after this bitch, okay?
Yeah.
Or nicknamed anyway.
Yeah.
So, anti-ideology. See if this sounds exactly like the movement that she created as it stands today. Anti-ideology consists of the attempts to shrink men's minds down to the range of the immediate moment without regard to past or future, without context or memory, above all without memory, so that contradictions cannot be detected and errors or disasters can be blamed on the victims.
Yep.
Isn't that is Fox.
That's Wisconsin right there.
That's Fox News corporate policy.
Yeah.
I just quoted you. It is the deliberate dumbing down and really turning into dumb animals.
Yep.
Their followers. Because if their followers had anything like critical thinking facilities.
It's that red light machine on The Incredibles where they erase the babysitter's brain.
Yes.
You know?
Everything's fine now. And the entire right depends on two things. One is the amputation of the human memory yep. of their followers
yep.
willfully, because, you know, the alternative is too frightening to contemplate,
yep.
and the complicit getaway car driving on the part of the mainstream media
yep.
that
yeah.
lets them get away with it, that permits yeah. them to keep going on the air, keep Newt Gingrich and people like that on the air every week, lying in one venue, saying the most outrageous things to promote the right in one venue. Then they come on the air, and David Gregory obligingly never asks them anything about it.
Well, and I was doing some research on David Gregory this week. It's funny you should mention
really?
Him. And
yes,
trying
it is
to
funny.
Figure out how much money those folks make, because I find it fascinating that we're focusing on how many millionaires there are in the Senate mm-hmm. and of the top 10 most wealthy individuals in the Congress. Mm-hmm. Which includes a few Democrats. John Kerry is one of them, and
sure. oh,
Jay
yeah.
Rockefeller is another. You know who the richest member of Congress is?
Die. Daryl
Issa, worth $414 million.
Really? Yep. Wow.
Anyway, all of the top 10 wealthiest members of Congress voted for the Bush tax cuts. And so I was trying to figure out, okay, well, you know, how many of these guys are making eight-figure salaries? And I was really just trying to do some research to find out. You know, how much they make. And I didn't get very far.
Mm-hmm.
But those of you who aren't aware of this, I was sort of aware of it, but when I read it, I went, wow, I didn't really know that. David Gregory's wife was one of the top four executives who had to resign when the government took over Fannie Mae in 2008.
Wow. Wow.
She was a vice president of Fannie Mae from 2006 to 2008.
Uh-huh.
And so we expect David Gregory to be an agent of change?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And I'm not, you know, don't get me wrong. I am not slamming David Gregory's personal character, or relationship with his children or religion or anything about his personal life.
No.
But I am going after his career.
Yeah.
I really am. And how he carries himself out in his career.
And his career depends on the goodwill and cooperation
of the Beltway.
Fellow powerful millionaires
yep, exactly.
who live within a mile of him
mm-hmm.
in his little enclosed universe.
Yep.
And that's why you can't find David Gregory's salary online, because I'm sure you'd have to piece together, work really hard to find the salaries of major media people. They're not out there.
No.
You know?
I was thinking about how issues are covered, not just money issues, not just banking issues, not just Wall Street issues, mm-hmm. but issues like pregnancy and abortion, and it is this group of people who want to be part of the Davos generation
yeah.
rather than part of the United States of America. We've talked about that before, the mm-hmm. article in The Atlantic, that the super rich are, you know, it's not that they don't want to make the world a better place, but they do it from on high.
Right.
And so the fact that, you know, women in Oklahoma don't have access to family planning services is such an abstraction.
Right. The distance between, as you and I have said before, wealth is a foreign country.
Yeah, yeah.
And the distance between them and the woman in Oklahoma who doesn't have access to health care, to yeah. family planning care, to postnatal care, or to abortion services is only incrementally different in terms of actual wealth than third world country health problems.
Except that third world health country problems can make one from that on high situation look like more of a saint.
Right.
Helping a woman, and I noticed this. I'm now going to climb on my mountain for a moment and tell you about what it was like at Harvard.
Please tell me more stories about Harvard.
This is exactly the same thing. When I was at Harvard Divinity School, you never talked about American Christianity. You never talked about Jesus in terms of being related to your own personal life. You didn't talk about religion in terms of your own belief in any kind of Christianity. I was laughed at in class for talking about the Bible, talking about anything that had to do with personal American religiosity and Christianity. You didn't talk about that. But you were allowed to talk about Catholicism in Central America. And you were allowed to talk about, you know, various evangelical movements within the southern rim of the Sahara, you know, or you were allowed to talk about You know, as long as it was quote unquote foreign or comparative world religion, then it was okay. Because that was somehow, and it was so patronizing on one level, but on another level, it was because it's third world. You know, we're benefiting from that, and we're being politically correct in benefiting from this. And it, you know, I'm not saying that the super wealthy people who go to Davos don't want the world to be a better place and aren't doing what they can do, what they can to make it better. Mm-hmm. But they're doing it in a way that glorifies them.
Yeah.
In a way that they're comfortable with.
Again, I am not knowledgeable enough to slight or impugn anyone's humanity. Mm-hmm. But what you just said made me think a prophet is not without term paper potential, except in his own land.
Country. Yes.
And, but there is a level of remove and abstraction. You know, when the rich are different than you and I. I know you are a fan of 30 Rock, as mm-hmm, am I. But mm-hmm. when Jack Donaghy is negotiating with his nanny, well, say you have a sack of potatoes, which costs, I guess $800. And you see another sack of potatoes that costs $400. Yeah. And you know, the implicit funny, which being like Chris Matthews, I will now explain the joke to you. Even funnier.
Bad.
But the idea that they don't have any fucking idea what goes on below the level of the boardroom. Once you are freed of all material concerns, you can indulge your hobbies and your humanitarian projects.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the idea that you live and work and sweat and toil side by side with common folk like me, and you share a bond because you live in the same country, and the education system is of direct, immediate, personal concern to you, and the status of the, you know, the military is important to you because you might very well have been in the military.
Yep.
In a dangerous job, because that's what people did during World War II. That sense of common purpose democracy is just gone now.
Yep.
And I don't see it ever coming back.
No.
And so
because, you know, the school issue is so tantamount to everything.
It is.
Because if your primary concern is making sure that, you know, your child is at Sidwell Friends rather than
some
then teacher salaries and classroom size and so forth are just an abstraction and always will be.
Yeah. We have returned to the Medicis where, you spend
some people think that's a really good thing. Some people I know personally think that's a really good thing.
Well, you know, you have several wealthy dynastic families who, in order to buy, you know, a good name for themselves, start sponsoring the arts and charities and so on and so forth. And there are any number of people who believe that is what there should be no government outside of the noblesse oblige of rich families. Yeah. That, you know, it is the charity of wealth and what you feel like giving on a particular day to a particular cause is all that should be available. There should be no social safety net. That the feudal states and the Italian royal states, as documented by Niccolo Machiavelli, is what we should be, is the natural state of humanity. And of course, if you are a wealthy person and you got weaned on Ayn Rand when you were in your 30s, of course you believe that. You have found an ideology that explains, that allows you to live your life without any guilt.
I want to switch gears here because we've been on the phone for...
Yes, we have.
A while.
So let us shoot over to workplaces.
Yeah, I want to talk for a minute because I was listening to our Thanksgiving show earlier today, and we had talked then about doing a podcast about work with a workplace and the assumption that our economy is a post-manufacturing economy, which it is not.
It is emphatically not.
Emphatically not. And also the question that, you know, keeps coming up, which is a valid criticism of John Boehner because he wanted to know from Barack Obama where are the jobs, you know, back when that was not his responsibility. But when asking John Boehner where are the jobs assumes, I think in the back of that question is a false assumption that somehow nothing really can be done about the job situation, that there aren't any really ideas, that government can't do anything about it, and that Boehner was wrong to ask the question. And so now we're going to give it back to him in spades, which, you know, is fair to give him the question back. But at the same time, I think we're missing an opportunity to show that progressives do have ideas about reviving the manufacturing economy in America, providing jobs and jobs training to people.
Yes.
And also finding ways to encourage business, not just small business. When I say, and when I say encourage, I mean cattle prod encourage. encourage large corporations that are sitting on billions of dollars to hire American workers. There are ways to do that. And it's not just by coddling them in a diaper to feel security, enough security to invest, because that's not what's going on here, I don't think. I'd like to hear what you think.
Well, but, you know,
and I also want to hear about broken regs, because you talked about that too, that there are broken regs, old, rusty pipes that the government pushes people through, rusty pipes, to get them into job training programs that aren't really effective.
No, they're not. And they haven't been for a long time. And the way you talk about creating jobs is precisely the opposite of the language Democrats have been using. I agree with the intent, but and I agree when I'm talking among my liberal friends that that's a perfectly fine language to use. But what that the implication of government creating jobs means, those jobs don't really need to exist. Those are make work jobs. Those are jobs you are creating by taking the money from hardworking taxpayers and propping up some bum who can't get a real job. So when we say government created jobs, that is a buzzword. That's a code word for the WPA.
And Grover Norquist wins again.
Yes. I happen to believe in government make work jobs. I happen to believe in the WPA and the Civilian Conservation Corps and art employing artists to do public art on the public dime. I believe in all those things. But those will never be considered legitimate sources of employment by the right under any circumstances ever. In fact, they will be considered proof that we're just secretly a bunch of commies. And we don't have faith in the free market. So having the argument about have the government make jobs is self-defeating. However, one of the implicit lies in Ayn Rand's fiction, for example, is her noble heroes always tend to be these lone geniuses who, sitting alone in the lab at 2 a.m. with only spare parts and some baling wire, like MacGyver, only with bigger chins and bigger cocks, you know, somehow they create fictional engines that pull electricity from the air, or they create whole railroads that do amazing things, or they create miraculous metallic alloys that no one's ever seen before. And they do it all by themselves with no support from anyone else in the back room, solely on their own. Like the fiction of America being an empty continent before capitalism arrived here, with nobody here, with abundant resources for the taking. It's another lie about the creative process and how the workplace works. Now, in the Rand fictional workplace, of course, you don't need public education, which she deplores and her followers deplore, because you should just get out there and learn a trade by yourself, by the sweat of your own brow, and then you'll have somehow a miraculous amount, a transition into a master, and then you'll be able to be a wealth producer. But that's bullshit. That is just bullshit. That is not how a modern factory works at all. A modern factory functions in teams, with teams of people operating very high-tech equipment, because the owner of the company had to spend millions of dollars to buy very expensive equipment. You're not in the back room tinkering this crap together.
I can't imagine that happens ever.
No.
You know.
No. Now, there are master machinists who can do really amazing things. There's people who've been working on lathes and stamping machines their whole life, and those people really are very good at what they do. But the company probably bought 2 or 3 machines from a French company or a Swiss company that are very, very sophisticated and very expensive, and they don't want Hank Reardon or John Galt fucking around with those machines at 2 a.m. to see what they'll do.
Right.
They want somebody who knows how to program the machine and operate the machine and use it correctly and be able to change from one setup to another setup to another setup in a matter of hours as opposed to a matter of days.
Right.
That's how the company stays profitable. And the way you get a small company that can do these things, since they don't have time, money, or resources to create their own training department and buy a whole separate set of machines for these guys to fuck around on,
Yeah.
Is you
yeah.
have
you can't have you practice have a, machines
no.
when they're from Switzerland and they cost no. $4 million a piece.
Duh.
Yeah.
See,
yeah.
Now, oh, those robots you see in the Ford
yeah.
ads,
yeah.
the Sparks Slinger.
There isn't a practice
have,
robot over on yeah. the other side of the plant for people
Where's
to break.
The fucking practice robot that
yeah.
I get to play
yeah.
on and break, you know?
Yeah.
No. What you have are, if you're smart, you have a competent public sector.
Mm-hmm.
You have a public sector that has good high schools and good colleges, especially community colleges, where you have the public funding labs like that. Because not only does this worker in this factory that is the actual profitable manufacturing company of the 21st century have to know their shit, he or she has to go back to school every few years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the technology changes. Mm-hmm. Well, you can't afford to upgrade every time there's a twitch in the marketplace.
Oh, yes, you can. If you buy from Best Buy, you can do it.
You can do it.
They'll give you a new phone. They'll give you take your old phone, you know.
And they'll give you a brand new one right on the spot.
Right on the spot, right there. So, yeah, but this isn't going to happen with a $4 million Swiss lathe.
It's a five-axis, CNC machine.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to happen. It's going to happen when you have a competent public sector making wise investments in the training and education of high school students and college students and constantly upgrading and reinvesting. Mm-hmm. And you know what the big shortage is in this equation?
I don't.
Teachers.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm shocked.
Because
if you can teach this stuff, you can make a whole lot more money as a
machinist,
yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
you can
it
make
makes
a
sense.
Shitload of money as a mold maker.
What happened to the Votech programs in America's high school?
Now, you'll never guess when this entire problem sort of started to go south. When
Reagan?
Right about 1980.
when
we decided to massively disinvest in the public vocational education system, when everybody decided that working in a factory was beneath them.
Yep.
When everyone decided they'd go off and make money in the casino economy, pushing money around and being a hedge fund manager.
Yeah, yeah.
And speculating. Well, let's all flash forward 30 years and see how that turned out, shall we?
Yeah.
So now we have two economies to choose from.
And that's the thing. Everyone who would have been working in a factory today is now bagging groceries and working in a gas station as opposed to having an actual trade of fixing air conditioning units. We have a real shortage. I don't know about where you are in Chicago, Driftglass, but there's a shortage around here of reliable plumbers, air conditioning repair people, people who can come in and fix dishwashers, and they're in very high demand. You've got to wait. If you need something fixed, God help you if you own a school or a factory or someone where the entire air conditioning system goes down, and you've got a big piece of machinery running
your
heating
and
cooling.
Those are professions that require years to master and deserve high pay.
Yeah.
And that's, so if we go back to the 70s,
mm-hmm.
before all this went kerflooey, this is the part that is so fucking maddening. There's so much to this argument that's so stupid and maddening.
Mm-hmm.
If you go back to the 60s and 70s, you'll find that teachers made much less than plumbers.
Yeah.
They made
much
less than machinists. They made much less than everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Because those people had very high rates of pay, very good pension, very good benefits, because they were in unions.
Yeah.
But teachers had social respect.
Yep, yep.
So you wouldn't go into teaching because you were incompetent or lazy or didn't care. You went into it that was your calling.
Yeah.
Or in a lot of cases, let's face it, you were a woman or a minority
a woman,
and you couldn't get jobs any other way.
Yep.
So we had a sort of a captive group of people who were probably much higher skilled than you could get in a free market thanks to restrictions on the free market.
Yep.
And you had people in those professions out of respect, and they gained social status as opposed to big fat paychecks.
Yep.
Well, over 30 years, the trades and the unions lost those benefits thanks to Reaganomics.
Yeah.
So one half of the middle class got pounded down and down and down to the point where they're actually making about what teachers make now.
Yep.
And teachers and other public service unions who were smart enough to hang onto their unions
as opposed to going to 401ks and 403bs.
Exactly.
They're
looking across the way going, why am I being punished because you were stupid enough to buy Reaganomics?
Yeah.
I'm not doing a whole lot better than I would have done any other way. You know, this is the gradual increase in middle class, you know, benefits and outcomes that we were promised in the 60s and 70s.
Yep.
But everybody else jumped on the Reagan bandwagon and got fucked over.
Yep.
And now at the end of the parade, when all the money is in the pocket of Goldman Sachs, the people who got screwed aren't mad at Goldman Sachs because those are the people that they're supposed to respect because Ayn Rand says so. So instead they look around for someone to blame. And who do they find? They find the people who weren't stupid enough to fall for Reaganomics. And they attack them. They attack public service workers.
Well, and those are also the only jobs that couldn't be outsourced, too.
So,
as John Stewart said, maybe we can just import a bunch of Vietnamese people to teach your kids.
Yes.
You know, that'll work. You know, they won't speak English, but hey, you know, they'll work for nothing.
Or, as I believe he then concluded, we'll disassemble children and reassemble them overseas.
Exactly, yes. Right.
And teach them over there.
And again, it's the modest proposal all over again.
Mm-hmm. So the actual real honest-to-God capitalist, prosperous, small business that everybody professes to love and nobody knows anything about, that everybody wants the government to run like. Mm-hmm. I am, just as a brief aside, people who want to make government run like a business, I'm astonished, almost always know nothing about business and less about government when they say shit like that.
Yeah.
What they want is a government that's accountable, that's transparent, that is efficient. I want those things too because that's what good liberals want.
But do you think that this is something where unions like the AFL-CIO, et cetera, can use their newfound coolness to bring back? I mean, there is clearly a constituency within the business community who would love to have community colleges and high schools training their people for them.
Indeed. They need that. Mm-hmm. If they don't get that, they're going out of business.
Yeah.
These factories I'm talking about have, you know, the workers there are 15, 60 years old. They're going to retire.
It's going to be desperate. Yeah, it's going to be a desperate situation. So where do we go? Where do we go with this? Where do we find a constituency? Where do we find – I mean, first of all, the Tea Party and the Republicans aren't going to say, yeah, let's invest more in that unless they're told by their corporate overlords that this is what we need to do. This is now wingnut welfare, you know.
Well, Can you phrase
it that way? How do you do this?
I would suggest that this is where we can find common ground with people that we don't ordinarily agree with.
Mm.
Specifically, what do small businesses and unions have in common? It's a loaded question because I have the loaded answer, which is they're both human institutions.
Yeah.
And there are good human institutions and there are bad human institutions. There are good unions and bad unions. There's good businesses and bad businesses. So there are businesses who really just want to suck off the government teat until it runs out, then pack up their shit and go to Mexico or go to China. They really don't give a shit about this country and they only give a damn about the bottom line.
Right.
These are people who traditionally you can spot them because they're not reinvesting in their people. They're not buying new equipment. They're not paying for training. They're not looking 5 years out. Mm-hmm. These are people looking to cash out and get out.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do anything about them. And there are bad unions. There are unions who are stuck in the 50s and will never leave. And you have to accept the fact that those unions are probably not going to survive because they don't have a bigger vision for labor than give me my fucking 10%.
Yeah, yeah.
But there are good unions and there are smart businesses who both recognize they have a common interest in having a competent public sector, a well-trained labor force, and a prosperous, reasonable small business community that's making a decent living.
Mm-hmm.
Those people have – this is very much like the populist movement at the of the 1800s. These people have way more in common with each other than the people who are trying to pit them against each other, than the right who's trying to demonize unions as these monsters. Look at you know, Madison. Those people are not thugs. They're not monsters.
Yeah.
Fox had to manufacture a bunch of crappy propaganda to make them out to be so.
Yep.
My idea would be, if you want to act locally, go find some small businesses.
Mm-hmm.
Go find some people who are looking to survive, the people who survived the Great Recession, the Great Republican Recession, and are looking to hang on by their nails. And I'll bet you they're looking for good people.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the people who most desperately need, mind you, a competent education and public sector to be partners with and who are most amenable to those messages. So,
and then you put those people in charge of the committee to reinstate Votech at the school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it's going to be different from town to town, city to city. Chicago's needs are very different than Des Moines, Iowa. Every viable local economy has this problem where it has a bunch of businesses that ain't going to survive unless they get the trained people that they need from the public education system. And those people have a vested personal interest in making sure the public sector does what the public sector is supposed to do and should be willing to pay a premium price to get a decent outcome from their public sector.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then you can negotiate over you know, dental plans and so forth in good faith because everybody has the same interests at heart.
Right, right.
So, but it's work. You know, this isn't something that you do overnight. This requires trust among people, and that's really the hardest thing to get to.
I want to close by letting you know about a new fake Twitter stream.
Now that Mayor Emanuel
has taken his $5,000 and $10,000 to his – do we know what his favorite charity was?
Well, I followed his Twitter stream, and he wanted to know, okay, because he's going to be on the Colbert Report on Tuesday.
Oh, okay. All right.
And he's suddenly a celebrity, and God bless him. He earned every bit of that. But what he wanted to talk about on Twitter was, okay, Chicago media, let's talk about internships for Chicago Columbia College students.
Yeah.
Like, far, man. Spoke like a true fucking teacher, man.
Yeah.
You know, what are you going to do for my students? That's what I want to know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Goddamn right. So
good,
it's probably something like that. Yeah.
Well, a new Twitter stream emerged today. Mrs. Gingrich 3.
I love that.
Starts out with, turn-ons, chubby house speakers, the Pope. Turn-offs, finding out I have lipstick tooth. Oops. Islam. And then she goes on later in the day and says, lunch with Cindy wants me to do a no-hate pictorial. Nudie likes pics, but not into that tape across the mouth thing. It's about freedom. Post-lunch shopping with Cindy. Exchange safe words. Cindy lied and said hers is fiscal responsibility. You crack me up, BFF. And then her next tweet is fundamental. Her safe word is fundamental. Oh, gosh. And the last one I'll read is...
Or basically.
Basically. Fundamentally.
Yeah, basically fundamental.
Fundamentally.
Yeah.
Basically. She just said fundamental.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, that's... Yeah, that
that's a one-word tweet right there. Fundamental. And then the last one I'll read is, honestly, media, I waited on my knees for 6.5 years for nudie. You guys can wait 3 weeks. Oh, gosh. Yeah.
She said a mouthful, Blue Guy.
She's got a mouthful there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's our next first lady.
I think so. Your next first lady, bitches. Get used to it.
Yeah. Went down to Bed Bath & Beyond and picked her right up. Yeah. He went shopping.
Oh, yeah. He sure did. So...
What, Mrs. Gingrich 3, The Voyage Home.
We want to thank our listeners. We're so glad to have you, and we love getting your emails. And as I said, the Haley Barber Recovered Memory Institute came from one of our listeners, Paul. So thank you so much, Paul, for your input. Mm-hmm. But we want to thank you. You can email us at proleftpodcast@gmail.com. That goes to both of us, whether we're in Chicago or down here in the middle of the cornfield. Doesn't seem to matter. We just get our emails. And we will both get that if you send it to proleftpodcast@gmail.com. We have a website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can listen to past episodes for free with no download and no registration. We are also on iTunes, and we love our iTunes listeners. We thank you so much. Some people have rated and reviewed our podcast for iTunes. Mm-hmm. That helps us out a great deal, and we're really glad when you can do that. Thank you so much. At our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, there's also an opportunity for you to drop $5 in the hat to keep us going and keep us financially viable. We appreciate your help in that regard. We never ask for more than $5, and if you have it, we appreciate it if you drop it in the hat at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com. How are the Internet kiddies doing tonight?
Well, the Internet kiddies want to know, where are the jobs, Mr. Boehner? Because they're not under this sofa.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
This podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2011, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
I did too much talking this time.
I wanted you to. I knew when I came up with this topic that you would, but because I've been sick, I wanted to.
Right.
And we'll turn on Driftglass, and I'll talk for an hour about manufacturing jobs.
Yeah.
And I won't have to, you know.
Well, in that case, you're welcome.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I think
you're welcome, Blue Gal.
When I have a low energy night like tonight, you know, when I've been really sick as a dog, and we needed to do this. I mean, this is something that I think is totally timely given the news cycle that we're in. So.
Well, since you're sick.
Yeah.
Why don't you cuddle up with a pillow?
Yeah.
And get a nice cup of tea. And I will read to you now from Patents and Copyrights by Anne Rand, 1964. Patents and copyrights are legal implementations of the basis of property rights. A man's right to the product of his mind.
I'm hanging up now.